Hey there, welcome to the LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Matt Dumont, an LSAT teacher and tutor at the LSAT Demon and 3L at the University of Maryland. With me is Becca, who also teaches and tutors at the Demon and is also a 3L at the University of Maryland. How's it going, Becca? Yeah, I know, 3L, right?
I know. And last time we worked on how do we, we worked on how do we show 3L on our fingers. And then we talked about how that's not a great podcast question. So we're bringing it back up again. Things are going great.
But this is also for YouTube. So maybe some people will laugh at our silliness.
Hey, everybody on YouTube. Is this what passes for a joke for you? You're going to love law school. This is as good as it gets.
How are you? How are you, Becca? How was your summer?
Absolutely fabulous. We're recording this during my son's nap time, which is like a golden moment. I had a wonderful summer internship this year with Baltimore City Public Schools, and it was genuinely the best part of law school so far. I did so much stuff. I learned so many things. I wrote so many things. I found out what an escheat is, E-S-C-H-E-A-T.
I don't know what
that is. If you die without a will in Maryland, your money goes to the school district of the county where you resided at death.
If there isn't someone to inherit it, right? Like the typical sort of like common law inheritance, if you have a surviving spouse or surviving child, I imagine that it would probably go to them. But if you don't have those things and you don't have a will, it goes to the school district. Wow, that's nice.
I know. And that's a good segue into our topic for today, which is planning your will while LSAT prepping. Just kidding. Matt, tell me about your summer, because I know you had a good summer, too.
My summer was great. I finished, this is Monday, the 15th of August. I finished mine on Friday, my internship, and I was a judicial intern on the Court of Appeals of Maryland, which is Maryland's version of the Supreme Court, the highest court. And I interned for Judge Baran there, and it was incredible. I essentially was clerking for the summer, helping write opinions, writing bench memos, doing all the stuff. Certainly not to the level that a clerk would and will do, which I will discover because I got a clerkship during this summer, also on the Court of Appeals. It's going to be for my after I graduate. I'm super excited. I'm going to be back on the same court. So it'll be fun.
That's going to be awesome. I'm stoked.
I'm stoked. It's going to be great. So let's turn to the matter at hand. We have an email from Grace, and Grace is very timely. You know, it's right about the admission cycle. Got a couple of weeks before some of these admissions things open. And, you know, because like September 1st, September 3rd, September 10th, like all these, a lot of places are going to start opening then. And then some of the later schools that open admissions will be around October 1st. But the vast majority are during September. So this is a great email from Grace. Without further ado, she says, "Hi, I have a question that might be good for the podcast." We agree. Preparing for applications, I'm wondering how extensive the applications themselves will be beyond the pieces we can do beforehand, such as LSAT score, LSAC, GPA, or your UGPA, as Ben and Nathan have taken to calling it, the letters of rec, personal statement. She says, "I'm sure it depends on the school. I believe Ruth has said on the show before that Yale had an additional required essays. But will every school have additional essays slash questions to answer? Or will it be as simple as paying the application fee, giving them my info, and hitting submit? Just trying to be as prepared as possible to apply September 1st. Thanks in advance. You guys are the best. Grace." So, Miss Becca, talk what let's start off with what the applications are more in general outside of the LSAT, LSAC, GPA, letters of rec, personal statement. What do you remember about the rest of it?
I know. This is so funny because I'm sure you're having the same moment where you're like, wow, that was a while ago when I applied.
It was a while ago now. Yeah.
Are we old? Yeah. I think so. Oops. Point being though, the applications are school specific. So I totally believe, for instance, if Ruth says that Yale had a few extra things going on, in general, they don't have much extra in my memory. And I think I applied to about 12 different schools all over the country. So you definitely might have, surprise, read the directions. This is the best advice. Yep. The only thing you need to do is read the directions and follow them. There will not be like in order to apply to each school, there's like 5 hours of extra work required. No. That's is nothing like that. But there could totally be, like, for instance, I remember, I'm pretty sure it was Texas. I don't know if they have this now, but when I applied there, they specifically required a why Texas paragraph in your personal statement. So I had to go back and add one to my personal statement. That was not a huge thing. There are very few additional essays. I think Vandy had something, an additional essay, and I don't remember what it was about. You kind of just do it. You know, it would not be something to worry about, and it would not be something to be like, I have to get these ready ahead of time before the applications open. It's not going to be the kind of thing that's going to make you late. That's for sure.
So what you're saying, I think, in short is that the application process is also a test of reading comprehension.
Where did you get that idea?
Yeah, it is. It's about checking boxes. So the vast majority of schools that I experienced, and I think that this differs at the top, like if you're looking at schools, you know, especially above like the 25 mark and above, I would expect that there might be some additional optional things that might not actually be so optional. But the vast majority of these applications is just like checking a box, filling in a standard boilerplate form. And what's nice is that once you fill it in on like one or two of them, the vast majority of that information actually does transfer over to the other form applications, where it's like you don't have to type Matt Dumont over and over and over again. It just starts to populate. Now, some of the schools will have that question worded slightly differently. That comes up for things like ethnicity and like race considerations, gender considerations. There will be different ways that they phrase that. And so just be careful and read. But a lot of it's box checking. Now, they do have optional essays and some mandatory essays. There's definitely some infamous ones out there. The Yale 250 is one that you must do. Like, it's a thing. It's part of their application. There's also some that will specifically say things like, please explain any significant increase in your LSAT score. And what is our response to that?
Literally, the last class I taught on Friday, I wrote this in the chat box and told everybody to copy and paste it. This is what you will write. I knew I could do better, so I took the test again. This, do not make it more complicated than that. Don't spend any time wondering what is a significant increase. So I went up by 7 points between the two times I took the LSAT. I didn't write an addendum anywhere. Nobody asked. I think the personality of most law students is to overthink, which may or may not serve you well in your legal career, maybe sometimes, but that is not where to devote literally any iota of attention more than I knew I could do better. So I took the LSAT again, period.
Yep. Send. Yeah. And I agree. I think USC has that on theirs, which I applied to, if I remember correctly. And so I typed literally that. And then I was asked it in an, when I was on campus, I went to a tour at UCLA, and the dean of admissions there, Dean Schwartz, asked me, he was like, well, I see your LSAT's gone up a bunch. I went from a 163 to a 171 official. So around the same 8 points up. And I said, point blank to his face, I said, I knew I could do better. So I kept studying and I took it again. And he went, okay, well, let's move on. Like, what do you say to that? So answer that. But I do want to sort of pivot for a second, maybe unexpectedly for you, Becca, since we didn't talk about it, but it came up, it popped back into my head. I think there are a lot of optional essays in the point of like, why X? Like, hey, why this school? Some of those schools, that's not really optional. I know from my own experience, UVA, for instance, if you don't write a YX, they probably will put your application, unless you're like a 184.3 something. If you don't do that, they're going to put your... Yes, absolutely like me. no,
that's
they're going to
lie.
That's a total lie. They're going to put your application in a pile of like, let's check back on this. So make sure that you find out whether they're actually optional. But I think there's also a lot of optional essays with scholarship stuff. Did you do any like scholarship applications that included optional essays, Becca?
Yeah, that's a great question because you will not believe this, Matt. You and I have the same scholarship at the University of Maryland, more or less. That one did require a very brief essay. And again, it was, I don't even remember what the topic was. It was, you know, why do you want to go to law school or whatever, something like that. I basically took like the concepts of my personal statement and just, and it was fine. Don't make it more complicated than that. There were other scholarships because I was like, anything that you tell me, are you interested in a scholarship? You know, they're just seeing if you'll bother. Right. So I totally, and they're going to be topics about, you know, what do you want to do with your legal career? That was an easy one for me because I wanted to go into school law. I still want to go into school law. And I was able to just simply say, you know, here's my experiences as a teacher and a school administrator. And now, I want to study law so that I can do this from the other side. I'll be able to do this. Boom. Right. Like it's very cut and dry. I was very careful. Thanks to the good advice from Ben and Nathan on the podcast. I was very careful not to be like, I'm going to change the world and I'm the best and I'm so great. Just don't make conclusions about yourself.
Be an
adult. This is what I've done. Yeah. This is what I've wanted to do. This is where a law degree will enable me to do this job. That makes the admissions officer reading your essay think, oh, this is a very adult person and somebody that if I let them into my school, they're going to really want to come and they're probably going to come and be more likely to get good grades, stay, graduate, make my school look good. So that's all you're trying to do.
Yeah, it's jumping through some hoops on purpose in order to get more money on purpose. And they want to see, I treat those kind of things as red flag generators in the idea that, hey, is this going to help me more than it hurts? And by hurts, I mean, I don't want it to hurt at all. And so like, you have to take these essays, whether they happen or not for you. Well, if you don't do them, it doesn't matter. So I don't know why happen or not, I said that, but yay, live podcasting. But if you choose to go down that route, or if it's required for whatever reason, make sure that you proofread your stuff, like take the time to do that. It will take you some time to write these kind of optional essays or mandatory essays. Even if they're one sentence, I hope that you take the time to carefully think about how to say what you're trying to answer. And to that end, think about the ones that are out there that are optional, that are, you know, the typical sort of essays. You know, diversity statement, your GPA addendum, like those kind of things that are truly optional, and think about whether it is actually going to help you without hindering you. Did you write a diversity statement, Becca?
So I did not. I was tempted at first because this is, if you are an American millennial, you have been told you are unique. Mm-hmm. And as much
special
as that is
snowflake.
True. We are so special and that's wonderful. Love you so much. But at the end of the day, there was nothing in my story because I was like, well, I'm the only person with a teaching degree applying to law school. That is that is not true. Like, unless you have something that truly makes you fill a gap that the law school is looking for more diversity. And I will tell you right now, nice, well-meaning white women of America, you are not providing a new diverse perspective to your law schools. And you're probably providing the backbone of many wonderful parts of the law school. And that's great. But you don't come in and think, you know, nobody needs to hear your voice in a diversity statement. So I did not write one. Thank you, Ben and Nathan. I don't regret that. I can definitely say. Matt, did you write one?
I did, even though I am a
Why
white,
did you do that?
A white dude. Because I'm old, but I'm not old enough to have written one. And I think it was a mistake, to be perfectly honest. I think it was a mistake. And I got waitlisted at some schools that I probably should have gotten into. And so reading the tea leaves is impossible. Maybe I wasn't what they were looking for a number of reasons. But a part of me always wonders of like, oh my gosh, did they look at this and go, this guy's like a 36-year-old white dude. Why is he has no business writing a diversity statement. And then they look at it and check for the red flags did I make grammar errors? Did I make spelling errors? Like, who knows? I mean, I do because I wrote it and I have it still on my computer. But, you know, that's what I'm saying is like, did they look at that and go, what is this guy trying to pull? So be really careful. I wrote mine because I was an older applicant than the average, but I wasn't old enough to write that. I also wrote it from a perspective of, I'm a theater person. I'm fun and exciting. I traveled the country. I have all these unique perspectives because of travel. That just sounds even more privileged, to be honest. And so I think I ended up where I should have ended up. I'm very thankful to be in Maryland. I love that I'm at Maryland. But part of me always wonders, did I set off a bunch of red flags with that unnecessary diversity statement? And I think that that should be a good lesson for people. Really think about whether you want to write this statement and whether it's going to help you without hindering. There are a number of ways to articulate diversity that are already on the form. You're going to be checking boxes literally for gender identity and age and ethnicity and
veteran status,
all of those kind of things.
Lots of things.
Mm-hmm. Do you have additional stuff to add to that story beyond telling them? If that's all your diversity statement is, I really want to encourage you to think long and hard about whether to send it along in the first place.
And I think that also gets at one of the things that's different about law school admissions and like the law school personality versus perhaps other like job applications you've done or undergrad admissions. Law school admissions is a lot less like touchy-feely, and it's a lot less, you know, you totally scored points with your undergrad admissions office when you wrote the cutesy-pootsy. Probably really, really liked that. But it's better for you to be understated, you know, and kind of let things speak for themselves. This is where we are constantly harping. If you can possibly bring your GPA up, you're still in undergrad, shut down everything and do that first.
Yep.
You know, facts. If you can possibly, exactly, because nobody can debate, oh, look at that. They have a great GPA and a great LSAT score. And oh my gosh, they checked this box, you know, or whatever. You don't, somebody who really, really has some special thing, they don't really like talk about it. They don't make a big deal out of it. What's the, some football player, oh my gosh, now maybe I shouldn't even bring up this anecdote. Some football player was once asked in an interview why he never did touchdown dances. And he said, oh, I don't want people to think I've never been in the end zone before. And let's just say it was Bo Jackson. Maybe we're going to get, this is going to be the most commented on YouTube video on our whole, is everybody going to be like, no, it wasn't him.
I'm not a sports ball person for the most things, so I cannot help you.
Clearly me either. But the whole, the concept there is very true on law school admissions. Don't make a big deal out of things that aren't going to end up looking like a big deal. And you won't make it sound like, oh, ooh, that's a red flag generator, like you're saying.
Yeah. Red flag generator. And just always to circle back to it, speak on the facts. Tell them the facts about you. Tell them the facts about your life, if that's something that you're going to get into, for instance, from a diversity statement. If, you know, you were homeless as a child, that's a fact. Leave the conclusions at the door. Let them make the conclusions. Mm-hmm. So stick to the facts that talk about your story, those kind of things. Stick to the facts about your GPA. Don't make excuses. Say, hey, I got a 4.0 the last two semesters I was at school. That's a fact. They can't argue with it. And it shows your sort of upward trend. Any last things, Becca?
I would just say all of these questions, it's really fun to talk about them on the Demon Daily. They have been answered, each one of them, probably 20 times on the Thinking LSAT podcast throughout the years. It's really good for us to like repeat. You know, I'm glad that we answered these questions today. You would really be missing out if you didn't go back into the archives, just the search feature, obviously on thinkinglsat.com. Because I know the answers to all these questions from listening to the podcast and being able to apply it. So I would say one thought is, it's a balance, right? And you want to ensure that you are putting forward a personality to the law school, to the admissions office, that says, I really want to go to this school. I will absolutely come to this school if you give me a full ride. And I will totally, I want to come here, you know. So like when you have a chance to write a, if they have an optional why school statement and you have a really good reason. Yeah. For instance, when I applied to Wash U in St. Louis, I have a ton of connections to St. Louis. I have family there. I grew up, you know, a few hours away. I have the, there were all of these very legitimate reasons that I could say this school really, you know, and guess right. what? Surprise. They gave me a great scholarship. And the reason we didn't go is because my husband didn't get a job there. And now here we are in Maryland. But those, right. And for instance, by the way, what did I tell Maryland when I applied? And they're like, okay, you have a 176 and a 3.67. Are you just like trying to, what's going on here? And I was like, my husband just got a job 10 miles from the law school. I love Baltimore.
Yep.
Which I do. You know, those things are the facts, right? Look, I can tell you, when I tell you my husband just got a job like 10 miles from the law school, you go, oh, that's why you want to go here. Look, that makes sense. If I just say, I've always heard of the great reputation of Maryland Carey Law. No, you haven't. You don't know anything about this place.
Yep.
So balancing, no BS, but is there a good reason to answer some of those questions? Then you definitely should.
Yeah. Pretend that your reader is the most skeptical lawyer you know. I think that's a good place to end it. Yeah.
I love that.
Awesome. Okay. So thanks so much, Grace, for writing in. If you'd like to be on the show, email daily@lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.